Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so grateful that you've decided to take time to download and are listening to us today. We have another interesting person from the world of sports medicine and health with us today. We have Dr. Susan Wagner from here at Texas A&M with us. Welcome to the podcast, Susan.
Thank you, Tim. Glad to be here.
We're going to take a few minutes and tell everybody about why you're here, and then we'll just jump into this conversation. Dr. Wagner has a PhD in curriculum and instruction from Texas A&M University, and she has other degrees in physical education from a couple other universities. She taught physical education in elementary school for 3 years before she came back and got her degree, and she became a professor here. She's a clinical assistant professor here. She was the 2004 and 2001 Teacher of the Year here in kinesiology. She's the current coordinator of the kinesiology teacher certification, has been doing that since 2004, as a matter of fact. And so we're here today to talk about physical education in the schools, and that's your bailiwick. And your let's start with why is physical education important in schools?
Well, I just want to say, too, that it's my passion.
Okay.
Because I started there. Mm. I think physical education for children is extremely important, as well as adolescents.
But why?
Because...
Well, so many people want to take it out of schools. So many places have taken it out
correct.
Of schools.
It is a place where children learn how to move effectively and efficiently and learn motor skills that they might not learn otherwise. Many children today, of course, are involved in sports outside of school, but there's many children who are not. And a good movement background sets you on the path to lifetime physical activity.
Just simple things like throwing balls.
Yep.
Yeah.
Catching, kicking, trapping.
I know in one of the places I was at before, we had a program that helped kids that had motor development difficulties just learn simple stuff like that, like throwing balls and kicking, as you said, and even running. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how those large motor skills actually translated into fine motor skills like handwriting.
Correct.
And kids' handwriting improved.
Yep. That,
so there you go. There's another reason.
That's important. And another thing that's important is to have some knowledge about fitness.
Mm.
What is fitness and how do I stay fit?
Mm-hmm.
What things can I do? You know, as we progress up the grade levels, we try to infuse the idea that you can develop your own program and you can continue to be active after you graduate from high school. So I think that's an important message as well.
So once the kids learn that in elementary, do they need to do that in middle school? I know, again, some of the middle schools and high schools really have a tendency to take physical education out of the curriculum for most of the students.
They do. But don't you believe that children need to be active all their lives? How many hours a day do they spend in school where they're not active? And if they had a period every day of physical activity in the schools, that would be ideal.
Right. Now, many of the states now, I think, put in some mandatory times. The kids have got to be active so many, 30 minutes for 3 days a week or whatever. Is that enough? Do we need to do more?
We need to do more. We know that at least 60 minutes a day of moderate to vigorous physical activity, doesn't have to be in one big chunk, is optimal, and up to 2 hours a day. You know how children are. If they are physically active, they are better behaved, more able to concentrate in the classroom. And some schools are honestly taking out recess for young children, so there's less time for them to be physically active. And I don't know about you, if you've driven by a school lately, there's a lineup of cars, and they're being driven to school. I have a neighbor who drives two blocks to the school with her child.
Wow.
Could walk. So we need to increase that, the walking and biking to school, to help with the overall physical activity pattern. But without physical education in the schools, we have a lot of lack of activity, especially middle school and high school.
Well, how about the, I guess there are people that would say that's not important, that kids go to school to learn how to read, write, and do arithmetic. Why should we even be concerned about that?
Yeah, we have really good data that shows that a physically active child is a smarter child, does better on standardized tests if we're concerned about that, which we seem to be. And so even in our own state of Texas, the FitnessGram data that we ran after the first 2 years of testing showed us that children who had better cardiovascular endurance did better on their tax tests.
So let's make sure that people hear this very clearly,
because
I know this is a drum that I've been beating for a long time. You're saying that kids that are physically active in school do better on these standardized tests?
Yes, or let's say the ones that perform better on those tests, on the fitness test. That would not necessarily mean that being physically active in school translates, but I would say that given the fact that many children are not physically active outside of school, at least as much as they used to be because of other interesting competing things to do like computers and video games and so forth, we can do much more having them be active in school. And if they're active in school, the next hour after the activity, they're sharper. They just do better. They sit better and they perform better. We've had wonderful research out of Naperville that shows us that students, they have a 0 hour, and these kids come in and work out before school, and they do better academically in the subjects they have right after that workout. So it translates.
So in all different ways.
Mm-hmm.
We should have physical education in the school.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
I
don't know how much clearer we can be about that. I mean, as you say, the data is really deep and very clear about that.
Yep.
Why aren't people paying attention to that message?
It's costly. There's a cost associated with physical education. You have to hire a specialist. Many school districts require, or states actually require specialists. If you think about gymnasiums, they're expensive. Equipment for physical education. However, I will tell you that most school districts do not spend a great deal of money on their physical education programs. I've seen averages of about $700 to $1,000 a year in a budget for one school, which
Wow.
is very, very little. But, if you maintain your equipment, you have good basketballs and so forth, they stay for quite a long time. So if you invest wisely, you can have good programs. And many, many school districts or good physical education teachers do a lot of creative equipment types of things.
Even a
tape ball that you can use. You just wrap up tape around a piece of newspaper and you can throw and catch it.
But people may be sitting there scratching their head saying, wait, only $700 to $1,000 a year, but yet we see these football stadiums for middle schoolers and all the sports teams and all. How do we come to understand that paradox?
Societal.
Okay.
I think society values competitive sports.
That does not bleed over into the physical education program in the schools.
Does not seem to. I've had an experience here at home where one school district in this community decided to have what they call a wellness program in their middle school and require every student, and that included athletes, they required them to take it in middle school, which meant that athletics had to be outside the school day entirely. And they were able to maintain that program for about 2 or 3 years. And then the community just said, oh, no, we've got to have athletics back in the school day. So it came out as a requirement.
So they pulled wellness out for everyone
and
put athletics back in for the few.
Correct.
Not that we're bashing athletics.
No.
I think there's a role for that. But
Absolutely.
We also are concerned about the health and well-being of all the students.
Right, and the knowledge.
Right.
The understanding. And the other place that they've really cut the cognitive piece is out of health education. In this state, they have removed health education as a requirement in high school altogether and reduced physical education to 1 credit, which amounts to 1 year out of 4. And this is a time when students are dropping off the table in terms of physical activity anyway.
So it's
a mistake.
Yeah.
It's a big mistake.
Yeah, I think the national data shows that once they hit age 14, about the time they can start to drive, they're amount of activity they do on a daily basis just plummets.
Correct.
Plummets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm especially stunned about the health education. With so many health problems facing teenagers in particular and coming down the road in life, the fact that they don't have health education required is amazing.
It is amazing. Many schools have chosen to put it in the middle school, but I think there's also some more optimal time for, like, high school is a really good time to have some of that information as well. So,
yeah. I know at one point there was some discussion about making physical education and health education some of the tested on courses. Mm-hmm. You know, so much of the nowadays in schools, the emphasis is placed on courses that are tested.
Right.
At the end of the grade, and so many of your mm-hmm. arts and education, physical education, health education have gone by the wayside. Is there any traction in that movement to make those testable items?
Yeah, I don't know about the testable piece, but I do know at the national level mm. there's some legislation going around prompted by our First Lady, mm. who's a very huge proponent of physical activity in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a promotion there to have health and physical education be core subjects mm. in the school curriculum. And that's part of the Elementary and Secondary Education mm. Act. And so we'll see how that plays out. It hasn't gone through yet, and we're sort of waiting to hear.
Yeah.
So a lot of interesting things happen in legislative years and sessions and so forth. And so that's something we hope for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing when you talk to people individually, most of them are in favor of physical education or health
oh, yeah.
education. But then when it comes, somehow when it gets to the district, in the school boards, that stuff kind of gets written out, doesn't it?
Yeah. You would say, if I look at the data, about 90% of parents will tell you physical education is important.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to brass tacks, you know, and supporting it financially, that's another whole issue. If we could spend more time in math and science and those subjects that people deem as more important, then they'll go for that.
But the message is if they're physically active, they'll do better in those.
Yes, they will. Yeah, and I think the physical activity in the school day is incredibly important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine sitting at my desk for 8 hours a day. I'm not sure how many people actually do that,
mm-hmm.
actually.
Mm-hmm.
There are times I have to get up and walk around.
Yep.
Because otherwise I can't imagine being a 7-year-old kid doing that.
No. Well, you know, they say there's also, you know, some kind of movement, and this is something else you might want to look into. There's a local group that's promoting stand-up desks for elementary mm. age children, and there's several model classrooms in the mm-hmm. community where first grader, second grader, third grader has a desk just they stand at. And mm. now they do have the option of a chair, of a stool, but it's
yeah.
a standing desk, and increases their physical activity and increases their mental acuity and so forth. But you might say even a 7-year-old sitting at a desk never sits still, so they're
right.
moving.
Right.
That's not the same thing as physical education.
Yeah.
The other problem with physical education is when they start to look at it, if you look at one school of about 600 kids in elementary and maybe 1,000 or so in middle school, and if you have one physical education teacher who has to see all of those kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, the commitment financially is what's kind of at issue here. And so if I'm an elementary PE teacher and I have to see all 600 kids, can I see them every day? Probably not.
Right.
So
right.
the time that is devoted to PE, or if I see them every day, then I probably have 100 in a class.
Mm.
And of course I have a big gym, but the gym is not, you know, if you put enough kids in there, they can't move.
Yeah.
So that's a problem.
It becomes like herding cats.
Yeah.
There,
oh yeah. But you can take some more kids cause you got that big space. But
yeah.
Number one, 100 kids to one teacher is kind of ridiculous.
Right.
You know, in Texas, they have asked that PE class sizes be brought down to the same level as a classroom teacher.
Hmm.
You know, 24 to 1 or 22 to 1 is the current, but
do you think it's going to work? Or not work, but is that going to happen?
Partially, yes. Some of it has happened. I mean, they're looking at 45 as a
wow.
number. And then they talk about, well, we'll give you a teacher's aide who's not a trained person. And, you know, that's for crowd control mostly, I suppose.
Interesting way to say it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, the elephant in the room with physical education, and that is physical education has been perceived as a weaker sister to mm-hmm. some of the other academic subjects. Because
mm-hmm.
so often I think that physical education hour block of time has been abused
mm-hmm.
in the past. You know,
yep.
you'll throw somebody in there and just say, you know, you roll the ball out and let the kids go wild.
Mm-hmm.
How do you answer that kind of
yeah.
charge?
Yeah, well, when we look at who they put in the classroom, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Mm.
There's a number of people that are not well-trained
mm.
that end up in the physical education environment, and so they can do more harm than good.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, sometimes the PE is just about crowd control. Can this person manage 100 kids at one time and actually get some activity? Right. What an ideal program would have is at least 50% of the time that they're in there, they're moving at a moderate to vigorous level. Mm-hmm. So if we're there a half an hour, we would have 15 minutes of good quality movement. Mm-hmm. But if we got 100 kids in there, the difficulty is, you know, that they don't get the movement. And you're right, too. There's some sloth, I will say, in the ranks. Unfortunately, that's admittedly a problem. And particularly in our secondary levels, those teaching positions tend to go, and I hate to say this because I love coaches and I think athletics is great, but sometimes when a coach is assigned to physical education, they think of it as a lesser assignment, and they don't devote as much time to doing quality work there. And yes, they look at it as being, if I can keep those kids busy and out of trouble, then that's good enough. And it's not. It's really not. When we say at physical education, we're talking about an education. Right. Are they learning? And we should have real tangible outcomes.
Right.
I've seen, you know, I would be in favor of seeing a graduation requirement of a fitness a fitness level for all kids.
Mm-hmm. You know? So they have to meet a certain fitness level before they get out.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll ever happen.
Unfortunately, no.
They do it at BYU. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know
that. Yeah. Brigham Young students have to take a fitness test before they graduate.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Well, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking about, and you talked about 45 kids in a class. I think I'd like our audience to take a moment and imagine having to supervise and organize physical activity for 45 students.
Five-year-olds.
So 5 years.
Yeah. If you're not tying shoes and wiping tears, it's a challenge. So the people that are doing it and doing it well, they deserve a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you also touched on an interesting point there in the doing away of physical requirements in colleges and universities across the country.
Mm-hmm.
That has rapidly kind of gone away, hasn't it?
Yep. When I came to Texas A&M, we had 4 required physical education classes. We got reduced to 2. One of them had to be a health and fitness class. And now, our new core curriculum, they're gone totally.
And that was a state mandate.
Yep. Yeah. Well, our Texas A&M had the option of whether or not to keep them in the core. But something had to go, and guess what? Science got in and activity got out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And people wonder why we have an obesity problem in the country with kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's so unsexy to talk about being physically active because it seems to be a simple solution, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
Yes, it does.
And continues to amaze me. Help me with maybe the parents that are listening. We just had this imaginary, we've let them all organize a PE class with 45 children, and they've all already torn their hair out, and that was an imagination.
Right.
As a parent, how do you know that your child is getting a good physical education experience? Let's call it that.
Yeah. A lot of kids will tell you right up front, they'll be able to tell you, that was fun, I enjoyed that. And sometimes what's fun is not always educational, but if you just simply ask them, what did you learn?
Yeah.
There's got to be a learning piece. They've got to come back and say, I learned how to work with another person. I learned how to talk to that person and communicate while we were throwing a ball back and forth. So, you know, there's certain learning outcomes that should be happening, and the parent could ask about that. You know, the parent can actually find out how much time they're actually active in a class. Mm-hmm. The parent can go mm-hmm. watch. I would recommend that if you're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, quality, we got to hold everybody accountable for good quality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're outside the school sources that are springing up because we're taking PE out of the schools. Are there is this an opportunity for entrepreneurs to maybe
absolutely
put PE in other places in the day? And we're not talking about organized sports. There's lots and lots of those, but other types of activities.
Well, I think you'll find your health club gyms and those kinds of places are putting in what would be considered a physical education type of program. I see it all over this community, and I think it's a trend. you know, there's a, something called CrossFit Kids. Mm. You know, there's programs out there that mm-hmm. are more generic rather than gymnastics, soccer, you know, mm-hmm. those sorts of things. Yeah, I mean, I think that, that somebody has to fill the gap. And I think parents know that their kids need to be active. That's why they enroll them in sports quite often. Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting to me. We had done some work with the homeschooling community in another place that I was at, and mm-hmm. that was always my question to them was, how do your kids get mm-hmm. physical education? And it was interesting how many of the YMCAs in those areas right. were putting together PE programs, and these homeschool kids would come mm-hmm. 3 days a week to the YMCA and right. do those kind of programs.
Yeah. I actually used to work with the homeschool group here, and they brought their children to my movement lab.
Mm.
And so my students got to practice teaching with their children, and that worked out very, very well for them and for us because it, you know, they needed that. And then I know recently another colleague has done the PE for the homeschoolers because my students volunteered to assist him with that. So there's been some of that collaboration here with the university physical education, physical activity programs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you know, it's unfortunate because it could be done in schools, and it really because there's so many kids that how many kids can't afford to pay for an external physical activity program? Not that
right.
many.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, you brought it up at the beginning, and it's I've seen it over my career. If kids learn basic motor skills, mm-hmm. throwing a ball, kicking, running, and so forth, it helps them in so many, in self-confidence
right.
as well.
Right, that's a very important point.
Yeah.
You know, when you're a child, your confidence is developed from your body.
Mm.
It's not from your mind. You don't think about, oh, I'm smart.
Right.
You know, you're really, oh, I can do that. You know, if you master your body and your body movement, that's really big.
Sometimes being smart and the kid is not advantageous, I mean, as far as their peers go anyway.
Right, right. Absolutely. The kid that's more skilled physically is the generally the more popular.
So if we made you president for the day,
mm-hmm.
How do we change this? How do we make it different? What's the solution?
Well, quite honestly, that we require quality physical education in the schools. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no opting out for any, you know, there's a lot of reasons in many states that they can actually opt out of physical education. If it's a requirement, you know, the state that I grew up in, which is New York, at the time that I was going through school, athletics was out of the school day and everybody took PE.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, was it fun because everybody was there, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
the talented and the untalented, everybody together. And we all had a good time because it was, you know, designed differently than the competitive environment.
Right.
So, yeah, I think, you know, if states could step up and then school districts could pony up, you know, that would be the mm-hmm. that would be the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think it's a personnel issue more than it's an equipment issue because, as I said, their budgets are very small at this point. But facilities, too. You mm-hmm. know, if you got to build a big gym,
mm-hmm.
then it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we can be active outside. You know, I taught in Phoenix, Arizona, and there I didn't have a gym. Everything was outdoors, and boy, I'll tell you what, when it was hot, it was hot.
They say it's a dry heat.
Oh, yeah, but it was hot. And they would, you know, soak the grass, and it would be humid.
Yeah.
So it was not nice. But anyway.
Wow. We're running out of time. Been a great conversation. We give our guest an opportunity to give us a take-home message. What mm-hmm. do you want people to remember from this conversation?
I want them to remember the 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity every day for kids. I want all kids to be that active every single day, whether it's in PE, in recess, or going to and from school or at home.
It doesn't have to be all at once either, does it?
Nope. Accumulate it.
Yeah. Super. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay.
We'll have you back on later. We'll check progress of how this is working out.
Oh, goodness. Years.
We plan on doing this for years.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I'd like to thank you all for being with us today and listening. And our regular listeners know that it's this time of the program when we have our podcast question of the week. And with that question, here's Cheryl.
How many minutes a day should children be active?
Excellent question. And if you've been listening at any part of this podcast, you should get that answer. Be the first one to send us the correct answer at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu, and you'll win one of our nifty podcast t-shirts. And we've got the new edition out, so and those really do look cool. They were designed in-house, so they really look nice. So Send us that response. Never too late to respond. So again, thank you today to Susan. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
And thank you all for listening this week. Please join us next week when we have another interesting person in the world of sports medicine and health with us. And until then, we hope you stay active and healthy.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Cheryl Marek and Kelly Selman and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.